Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. We are officially into the second hour of the show. A quick refresher of what we've discussed so far. Everything gold, as you know, the Midas touch. So that gold price is yet again at an all-time high that we do see touching here today. $4,285 per fine ounce, as you've heard. So as we've been saying throughout the last few weeks, it really is all about the Midas touch. All things that glitter, quite literally, is gold. So we will also give you a refresher of the markets, touching all-time highs there too. 1.2% firmer at 113,024 points for the All Share Index. No guesses there. All rallied by the resource stocks, metals and mining as well, up by more than 5 and 6% respectively. In the first hour of the show, we spoke all things MVNOs. We spoke all things regarding luxury goods producer LVMH. And of course, gave you some insight into some of the business themes that are dominating the headlines today. Do stay with us and share your feedback on many of the conversations we've had so far. You're welcome to share your voice notes, just like Mpumi did, on 063-688-0959. I do want to whet your appetite, though. As you know, Thursdays are one of my favorite days on the show because this is where we have Pivot Point. And typically, it allows us the opportunity to get to know executive leaders behind the title. Individuals who themselves have served in contributing to growth in the economy, contributing to the solutions that are implemented by banks and institutions that you and I use on an everyday basis, helping us build our wealth, manage our risk, and most importantly, be able to interact with our finances in a more engaging manner. Tonight, we speak to a man who's done all this and so much more, having served more than 20 years at Standard Bank. Started off as a young graduate and now serves as the Group Chief Risk Officer at Standard Bank Group. Tonight we are speaking to Thabani Ndwandwe, joining us in studio tonight.
Pivot Point
on Kaya Biz. Kaya Biz.
Mr. Ndwandwe, such a pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Thank you. I mean, I'm so glad to be here, and good evening to you and to Abo Mkaya.
It's exciting. It's exciting to speak to you. And I'm actually excited to have you here. You're not alone. You're actually here with two of my favorite people at Standard Bank. I better be careful because the others will call me and say, I thought I was your favorite. So for the record, all of them are. As you might have heard, we've been discussing a wide array of themes regarding business and finance, and we've often spoken to you as well about economic data points and indicators that we discuss here on the show. So to have you here in this capacity, I am incredibly excited to have you with us tonight.
I must just admit, I'm generally easy in talking about economy, about banking, about fraud. I find it easy than this conversation, but I'm looking forward to it.
I'm excited. Don't worry, we'll get there. Black Friday and the festive season's coming up, so I'm sure there's a lot that you need us to be mindful of. But Thabani, let me declare, I am a huge fan of yours and your work. And when I looked at your LinkedIn profile today and read parts of your bio, very little is known about you publicly. But professionally, your blood is blue. You've been at Standard Bank since the graduate program that you participated in. So quite literally, you've had a front row view, really, to seeing the evolution of banking in South Africa and even working in many different factors. So when we talk about Standard Bankers, you are it.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite interesting, Cooks. By the way, I'm a fan of yours, as you know. I never say no to your show.
Thank you.
I'll get into trouble for this one. But nonetheless, I must just say to you, Standard Bank actually sponsored my school.
Yeah.
So I went to varsity through a scholarship program, and it was actually one of those things that, you know, Jaco Maree, who was the CEO before Sim and Ben, came up with a program to just get more black people into the corporate ladder, and I got through that scholarship program. And they didn't force me to work at Standard Bank, and I went into Standard Bank and I worked there, and I had so many opportunities. And to your point, I've seen so much happening in this industry.
Exactly. Everything from unsecured lending, taking care of risk, even looking at customer collections. So at some point, I guess you were part of the team that calls people to say, hey, Cooks, that credit card, we like the handbag, but you need to pay us back now. And I think this is important because for many of us, we sit as banking customers, but we don't fully understand the inner workings and operations of what it takes to lead, run, and adequately monitor a bank. But, you know, from your experience, if you had to explain banking 101 to someone like me or your grandmother, how would you define it?
Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time trying to teach my team is even to get out of the technical details, because the risk is that we make things over complex,
And that's because compliance is everything, right? Which we'll get to in a moment, which is where you sit.
And it's important, right? It's important. That's why the banking industry in South Africa is such a great industry. It's got good regulations, good laws. But actually what we do at any given time is we take people's money, which is their salaries that are hard-earned, their savings that they've put aside for many years. We look after them. And what we do, we then use those funds and transmit them into the economy by actually lending it out to customers to buy houses, to buy cars, to start businesses, etc. And that's what we do. And we hope that we can collect those funds back and make sure when the customers want their deposits, they can have them. Now, that's a very important role that we play in society. That's why you need a license to be a banker, because you're managing people's funds. And Gox, I'll give you a very easy example. If Kaya FM CEO sent you a text and said to you, "Cooks, you've been paid today," you will not believe them, I assure you. But when you see it from Standard Bank 100%. Or from another bank, you'll believe it. And so this is about trust. This is about actually managing trust and making sure that people can trust us at any given time. And so what we do is actually manage that. And then the last thing that we do is that we facilitate payments. You know, this is a very important thing that we do. We allow people to transact. We allow people to pay their families, to send money. Eshowe, where I come from.
Yay.
Hello, Eshowe people.
Sanbonani.
Sanbonani bagiti. And so we do those things. And we allow that to happen. And you have to do it at large scales for corporates, but you have to do it for a mom and an aunt who comes from a rural environment. So that's what we do. And I'm lucky to be at the center of it from a risk perspective, because my job is just to make sure that people can trust banks.
100%. And maybe let's go there. I can imagine when you interact with someone who's not familiar with the banking environment and you say, "Well, I'm the group chief risk officer." They're like, "Risky." But the truth is, it is layered and it is critical to the operations of the bank. I'd like to think of it as the gearbox. You know, the engine can be there, the tires might be ready, you might have a fuel tank, a full tank of fuel, but without the gearbox, there will be no movement, because this speaks to the ethos of building trust, which leans on compliance and minimizing risk. And talk us through that, maybe focusing on the overall pillars you look at as a group, but also coming closer to home as to where it touches us as consumers.
Yeah, and I always like to make it accessible again. I always laugh when I say I'm CRO, people say, "Oh, customer retention officer," and so forth. But actually, there's a lot of things that one can talk about. But when you think about risk, as I said, you know, there are a couple of things that we do, but they all boil down to trust.
Yeah.
As I said, what we're trying to do is make sure that you as a customer, whether you're a business, a corporate, an individual, when you've placed money in the bank, you know it's safe. Mm-hmm. So my job in that is to make sure that our strategy is right. We call that strategic risk, and we test the strategy, to do scenario analysis to say, if you do buy a bank in Egypt, what could happen? What could go wrong? Mm. And by understanding what could go wrong, you then put mitigation in place and make sure things are safe. And that's the first part. The second part is what we call financial risk. And the financial risk is things like credit. If someone borrows money from us, how do we know they can pay us back?
Mm-hmm.
How do we assess them? How do we make sure they pay us back? So you spoke about collections. When they can't pay us back, can we collect the money?
Got you. And maybe let's touch on that point, because I think a lot of South Africans aren't even aware of how regulation has changed in South Africa for our protection as consumers, but also to enhance our relationship with banks. And that's typically if you look at the affordability assessment, National Credit Regulator, and of course the ongoing communications we've had there. That must be a career highlight for you.
I mean, it's an amazing experience. So I started off before National Credit Act was introduced. National Credit Act actually came into existence around 2006 and, of course, officially rolled out around 2007. But what was interesting before that, we used to assess credit with no guidance. There was no law. We used to do our best endeavors to assess affordability. And what you would have seen many years, people would say, "Well, if you buy that house, that property is going to increase in value, so it's fine. Even if you can't afford it, we know we'll sell it." And so the industry matured and we had the National Credit Act. One of the most important things that ever happened in this industry was 2014. And then 2014, they updated affordability calculations.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they started telling us exactly how to calculate affordability, at least at the minimum, which said you must make sure that you leave someone with something to live with. Because you can't say, "Well, you earn 10,000, after tax, you've got 6,000 rands and then other medical aids. All those 6,000 rands goes to debt. No, what exactly. is this person going to eat? What is this person going to do? And I think that's actually one of the greatest things about National Credit Act. And our regulator has been doing a great job in enforcing that. But it's all for the customer. And I know customers don't like it when we tell them yeah. you can't afford the house because they say, well, who told you I can't afford the house? But we've got the laws that make sure that we do that. And I think it's for the greater good of this country. And I've been all over the world, in Africa, in Europe, in many other countries, including US. I don't think there's many laws that are as great as some of the South African laws.
This is something that I think is imperative for us to emphasize, right? And I've asked this question to many other banking executives, and I'm throwing it back to you as well, just in terms of the state of regulation of banks in South Africa versus our international counterparts. Yes, we have had a few banks, you know, fall under, and largely that's because of the flouting of certain rules or things that have gone unmonitored and unassessed. But in comparison to our counterparts in Europe and the US, where banks have shut down at a whim, I think it's important for us just to highlight, you know, just how advanced, mature, and really globally competitive our banking environment is.
Yeah, I mean, everybody goes to 2008 and says, well, 2008, no South African bank had to be bailed out by government. No.
Yeah.
Government never bailed out a South African bank. The whole world was being bailed out. But in South Africa, never had to do that. Why? Because we've got amazing regulators. Our regulator, actually, our governor wins awards in
yes,
the world.
We
lead IMF, we lead in IIF in the world. So you mustn't underestimate just how great we have the regulations, but the people we have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at our governor, you are proud.
Mm.
You know, when you look at National Treasury, we are proud. We've got institutions that are helpful. But what's more important for me is that if you think about just the COVID world, recently,
yes.
because everybody goes back into, you know,
GFC
2008. Let's bring our Gen Z people. If you just think about what happened in COVID, no bank went under in South Africa.
Right.
Post South COVID, many banks in the world, Europe,
yep.
US, you can speak about Silicon Valley,
yep.
struggled and there were problems. But in South Africa, we knew we could care for our customer groups. We did payment holidays.
Yes.
Standard Bank, I can tell you, we did over 100 billion of payment holidays, right? And I know the industry did the same. So South African banks care.
Mm.
And our South African banks didn't stop lending in that period, right?
Yeah.
Because we made sure that we keep funding people, giving businesses help, making sure businesses don't crash. So it's not just regulations, it's the approach of banks in South Africa. And that's what really makes me proud to be part of South African banking.
I can imagine, not just South African banking, but Standard Bank in particular. And Standard Bank, as we know, is the largest bank on the continent by assets, but also your reach in terms of the continent is far, wide, and deep. When you talk about Standard Bank, it really is a bank that does represent the continent, but the continent is made up of various nuances, different rules and regulations, different policies and governments and controls, and even financial behaviors. And given that your role as CRO, Group Risk Officer, actually speaks to managing, mitigating, strategizing to minimize these risks, when you look at the group and the markets you're in, just on the continent, we haven't even touched on China. How do you approach that? Because, geez, you know, Zimbabwe versus Malawi versus Kenya, all very different.
Look, I mean, we've got 21 countries in the continent. I mean, people have been quoting this stat. We've got 3.4 trillion of assets, but actually we lend to customers about 1.6 trillion across the continent. If you think of the personal business banking, we've got 16 million customers across the continent.
Sure.
Now, to manage that is not easy. And so here's the thing. We understand as Standard Bank that we're not suitcase bankers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is that we don't just put money into a country and control it from Johannesburg.
Uh-huh.
We hire the best people in Kenya. In Nairobi, if you were to go to Nairobi, you'll find I've got the best chief risk officer, Edwin Mukai. If you were to go to Nigeria, you'll find Kola, who runs Nigeria for me on the ground. So these people are on the ground. We understand the continent on the ground. And that's very important for us because the biggest risk you can do is to act like South Africa is a bully in the continent.
Yeah.
We know in continent, we respect people in the country, we hire the best people, and then we give them frameworks and methodologies that they work under and the constructs they work under. But we hire the best there, they give their freedom, and we respect the in-country regulators.
Yes.
Because that's why we can stay in Nigeria and not get kicked out. We respect the in-country regulator in Nigeria. When I go down to Kampala in Uganda, I know that the in-country regulator, I visit them and I greet them. We respect them. So this is why I think it works. The risk you can do is when you run a big institution like I do, in from a risk perspective, is to try and think you can control everything yourself. Even in South Africa, if I go down to Durban, mm-hmm. I know that I've got great people in Durban. If I go down to Cape Town, if I go down to Kuruman, there's great people there that I rely on. If you don't have good people, you're just never going to win.
I like this because it takes us to the link of the skills pool then and the talent that's required within the banking fraternity and specifically an organization like Standard Bank that needs to be locally relevant but still globally competitive. Yes. How has that shifted in the last 20 plus years that you've been in the banking environment? Before, I think accounting, finance, Bob's your uncle. Now we've got friends who come from the media industry. I might be next who are also there, serving a different purpose though, but hey, let's see.
We actually, I mean, I chair a committee called Model Approval Committee.
What does that mean?
And what it does is that the models we use in banking.
Quants and...
Yes, and we use a lot of models that assess risk and whether it's credit risk, whether it's market risk, where all the risk types I was talking about earlier, you have models in general that you apply and then people use those models to make intuitive decisions guided by models.
Gotcha.
Many years ago, those models were simple logistic regression. In fact, when I started, we were using linear regression. And I remember we were starting to use logistic regression. It was a miracle. I mean, amazing. You're smart. And today, I had a model approval committee where half of that committee was all about generative AI.
Whoa.
And so how do you use generative AI to make people's work easier? So you can see the transition from manual assessment of risk to digital assessment of risk to now using things like generative AI to start speaking about agentic AI, which is now we're going to use agents to start helping us do shopping. Goodness gracious.
Who knows
what we're going to do, because now I have to understand that an agent wants to pay a transaction and I must support the transaction. So the skills I need have become much more different. Data is becoming more important. Technology skills, AI skills have shifted, and we need most of those skills. But here's one thing that we'll never stop needing is people who understand people.
And that's important when it comes to money.
Yeah.
Right? Because that trust and that relationship is actually built on that basis of the interaction.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that for anyone who wants to be in the world of finance, financial services and banking, up your AI skills, but still maintain the people connection. But what does that look like in a country like South Africa and much of the continent where, again, the dynamics of inequality are so vast?
Yeah.
You know, some of us still, you know, prefer going into branches or need that interpersonal relationship. And then you have the likes of us who use our digital cards, want to do everything on the app. You know, the less talking we do on the phone, the easier, the better, the faster.
Yeah, I mean, I when my phone rings, I get a bit upset. But my mom prefers a phone, for example. It doesn't like messages. And so you have to understand you're serving a spectrum of people. And that's exactly why I say we need people to understand people. They talk about this idea of omnichannel, and we use that word omnichannel loosely. But what it is to say, I understand that I serve a church of people, a wide array of people, and I must understand what their needs are. And for those people, I'll place different needs. Where I can, I'll use digital for those people who want digital. And then those other people, I give them a human touch. And many of us, you included, when we say we're buying a car or we're buying a house, I'm sorry, we forget that we're digital. All of a sudden, you want to smell the leather.
Yay.
All of a sudden, you want to go to the kitchen of the house, etc. So it's actually contextual. But that requires me to understand the person behind the transaction, to understand what they need at this point, at this moment. So what we have to build is to build what we call T-shaped people, who have deep skills in the technical arena, but wide skills in understanding different things and how the world works and how money is made and how transactions evolve. And so that's what we're trying to build consistently. And so when we bring in grads, we try and rotate them. You'll take a grad, put them in a branch, put them in IT, put them in, so that they, at least they've got rounded skills all over. Now, you said something, though, that's very important for us, is that as a country, by 2050, as a continent, not country, by 2050, we should have about a quarter of the workforce in the world.
Oh, yeah.
But that depends on what we do as a country. That's what depends on what we do as a continent.
Especially
with
our youth.
Do we invest in skills in the youth? Do we take this youth dividend and actually make it a youth dividend or do we make it a youth crisis?
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest challenges that, of course, we all have to work hard on.
100%. Yeah. If you've just joined us, we're having a phenomenal conversation for our Pivot Point discussion tonight with Thabani Ndwandwe, a Standard Bank Group Chief Risk Officer, who's joining us tonight to help us reflect on some of the pivotal lessons and experiences he's had in his more than 20 years of experience in Standard Bank. We've spoken how technology is certainly playing a significant role, especially with the leaning towards AI, and understanding how, despite the new developments in the world of all things tech, that fundamentally one's connection with people still remains pertinent. Something else that we've touched on, Thabani, that I'd like us perhaps to venture into in terms of getting your thoughts around, I guess, leadership, right? And getting to know you beyond your title, really. You've naturally led various teams through various experiences. And as we know, a team is only as great as its leader in terms of how you unlock the potential around them. And I'm quite keen to understand, you know, what have been your pivotal moments and experiences in terms of leadership? Because from the global financial crisis right through to COVID, which is the most recent, and maybe later, may I say, April, with the return tariffs,
you've seen quite a bit. Geopolitics.
And so you're cautiously optimistic about the future.
Absolutely. Look, you make a point, and I must just say, when you say 22 years and then you say Thabani, then I definitely feel very old. But nonetheless,
it's all from a respect point of view.
No, I do know. But I mean, just on that reflection point. I've had an amazing career. You've mentioned this idea that a team is as great as a leader, but the leader is as great as a team.
Yeah.
They have. And so one of the things I've had to learn is that I was 28 years old when I became an executive in the bank. And that was
28. I can imagine the comments your friends were saying.
And in risk. And in risk. So you must imagine in risk, it's naturally was, it's a place where people are experienced, where people have got gray hairs, people know what the world, they understand things. And the first thing I had to learn was, what value do I add now to this team? Because these people have been there for 30 years. Mm. These people have been there for many years. They know everything. So what am I here for?
Mm.
And so I understood certain things at that point, because it was a reflection point. In fact, I had a person I went to, a mentor, and I asked them, I said, what? He said, you have to do the only thing you can do and never compete with your team. So have the best people and never compete with the team. And the thing you can do for them, number one, is to make sure that their ideas are understood, is to make sure that they have the tools they need to do what they need to do, is to give them opportunities to feel valued so that they can show up. But it's also to unite them behind a key common purpose.
Yeah.
And so I learned that because I was forced not to compete and not be too technical. I am now, again, yes, I'm 22 years in risk, but the people I lead, my CROs and the likes, across the continent, are all close to their 60s, some of them are in their 50s, I'm in my 40s. Again, I'm understanding this to say, what can I do for them? I have a partnership to form for them. I have to give them opportunities. I have to give them careers. That's what I can do. I can be their advocate. And so part of the leadership journey was learning to not be a hero. Was learning to make your people heroes and supporting your people and setting them up for success and actually putting a common purpose and a vision that they can all follow. And then you support them and become their biggest cheerleader. And that has been, you know, knowing that I don't know everything has forced me to do that, because otherwise I'll try and compete.
Got you. Making your people heroes. I want to talk about people as well within the context of social economics in South Africa. And I raise this because you did mention that you come from Eshowe, in KZN, a beautiful part of Zululand. And I think for, again, also a part of the country that still needs a lot of investment in its people, development in its people. And this might be an unusual question, but, you know, is there an opportunity for financial services to play a bigger role in advancing and unlocking so much more potential within our human capital in South Africa, specifically youth?
Absolutely. Cooks, one of the reasons why people like me have to take these jobs seriously and understand that the history we bring should help the institutions think differently. So it's because we understand the societies we come from. We can't then come to Rosebank and then sit in the high towers and not think about where we come from and think about how those societies work. So how money is made in the townships, how money is made in the rural areas is very different to how money is made in Sentin. And so we have to, as banks, help facilitate payments there. How do you help a gogo who's trying to sell easy qeda, about popcorn or whatever, makip kip, How do you help them actually make their meaningful contribution? How do you help that young man in the rural areas who can't find a big job in the suburbs, but actually make that business meaningful for them?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look like Standard Bank.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look like Checkers. But it has to look like what's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you help them? Lastly, education. I think we have a big role to play in helping people get real education, supporting education from ground up into the other areas. So I still think as banks and rest of corporates in South Africa have to partner with government, and we must continue to partner with government and do more to support. Of course, we have to respect our roles and respect our lanes between ourselves and government, but we cannot sit back. Otherwise, as I say, that youth dividend will become a youth disaster.
100%. Yeah. And that's why we also see the partnership of B20. I know Standard Bank is a significant sponsor and partner. Sim Shabalala, he's heading up the infrastructure task force, if I'm not mistaken. Finance and infrastructure. Exactly. But Thabani, before I let you go, I could talk and go on and go on and go on. But I don't want to leave our listeners out of this conversation. I typically always invite them to share their voice notes and quite literally do the show with me. And Dumza has done exactly that. He shared a voice note regarding the themes you shared around the advancement of banking in South Africa.
You know, I one of those people who say that, you know, as South Africans, we need to be very proud of what we have, especially in terms of the banking. You know, we have done so well to a point that I think other countries just envy us. It's just that they're not going to tell us because they know that we do better than them. I mean, in terms of innovation, in terms of convenience. You know, I've been also to other places and I was just quite shocked. More especially, you know, the big countries where they still do everything with checks and we're like 1,000 steps ahead, you know? So well done to us and well done to Standard Bank.
Isn't that a beautiful voice note from Dumza?
Yeah, I mean, I'm smiling and I'm quite excited. I mean, thank you, Dumza. And I'll just say one thing. I go to many countries where we operate. Whenever there's an economic crisis, we have what we call flight to safety. And what flight to safety is when people move deposits from certain institutions, and we always get in all deposits into South African banks. That's just how it works generally, because we are seen as trusted banks and trusted organizations.
Are you seeing that capital flight now coming in?
In some of the countries we are, and sometimes we are scared because when we have some of it, we have to put it in government bonds and we are trying to avoid that. But that's just the way of being a great institute across the continent. And that's really, so Dumza is right. And thank you so much, my sister.
100%. But Thabani, thank you so much for your time this evening. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Congratulations again on the new appointment. One that you'll certainly thrive in, given your history, your knowledge, and the commitment that you've shown to not only banking, but financial services overall. We, as Kaya Biz, thoroughly enjoy the contribution and analysis and assessment you've shared and helped us with in terms of economic data and insight. We'll miss it because we know your availability will be limited now. But more than anything, know that not only have you played a role in democratizing access to banking and financial services for many South Africans, but also democratizing access to that information for people like us in the media, our listeners, our peers, for all of us to have a better understanding of what you do. So thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Someone. Thank you so much, Dooms, and I mean Cooks, and thank you so much for this. I just want to say to my, never share your password, never share your one-time password, never click on the links you don't know. Please protect yourself. Fraudsters are out there. I'm not going to miss that message. I'll keep coming back to say it. But thank you for this opportunity. It's great, and I love South Africa and I love Abomkhaya, and I wish everyone in this country great success. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. On that note, we'll have you just before December. Jinji, we'll make it happen so that we are not freaked out by the cyber criminals during the festive season. That is Thabani Ndwandwe, Standard Bank Group Chief Risk Officer, joining us tonight to really reflect on some pivotal moments, experiences and lessons that have been learned during his tenure in the banking industry, and of course influences that are certainly shaping how banking itself is also changing in the South African environment.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.